Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle.
Hi,
we
Natalie.
Are in the studio, and I have with me Senator Dan McKay on the right.
Hi, everybody.
And on the political left, Jim DeBacchus.
Good morning.
You sounded so friendly when you said
I am
hi.
Friendly
hi,
this
Natalie.
Morning. It's almost springtime, and things are going well in our beautiful city and our state.
AA meeting to get started.
Like, I want to talk about what's going on in the political world up in the governor's office. I guess the bill signing period has just ended.
Mm-hmm.
We've had some pretty high-profile bills signed in the last week or so. The hate crimes bill was signed. The inland port bill signed. But vetoes were hard to find after this legislative session, but Dan, you were one of the receivers of it.
Well, you know, there's the few, there's the proud, and there's the vetoed.
Tell the listeners what got vetoed.
Well, so 2 years ago, there was this big dust up between the governor and the legislature, and so leadership encouraged, you know, me to run a bill. A year ago, we ended up just not getting it through the Senate because, you know, a lot of reasons. Basically, the dust-up was over how a special congressional election should happen.
And inspired because Chaffetz didn't finish his term and you got to go fill that seat, right?
And the process, I mean, as rare, you know, we now have 7 volumes of Utah Code, right? That's exciting for people. Mm-hmm. And in the 7 volumes, you can look through all the pages. There is no process for what happens when a member of the U.S. House of Representatives steps down. There is a process for how a U.S. senator is to be replaced.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. Constitution says that the governor shall call an election. And it also says that the legislatures of the states shall control how elections are run.
So they both have power here.
Both have power here, right? So the code was silent. The governor wanted it one way, which included a signature process. The legislature said, come on, let's hurry this up and get this done. As a backdrop, when a member of the legislature or a member of the county council or any other partisan office in the state occurs, it goes back to the party of whomever the office holder is, nominates someone to fill the rest of the term until the next general election. So that person, like, for example, when Ben McAdams stepped down, he was going to be up for re-election in 2020. Jenny Wilson was nominated by her party with, I think there were 7 candidates, and she was selected to be the next county mayor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that process worked. That's how I was originally elected and several members. That's how Jim was originally elected. There was a vacancy and Jim was elected.
And something for our listeners to know, it happens more often than you would think.
It happens a lot.
People don't finish their terms.
And for good reason, a lot of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so people, you know, go off and do public service for a little while, and then they don't do public service.
Occasionally, there are hookers involved.
Well, or they need to spend time with their family. Sometimes it's both. But that said, sorry, that's terrible. Yeah. But that said, these vacancies and how they occur was a little dust up between the governor's office. The problem I found last year is I could not find a path for including signatures in the process to get it out of the House of Representatives. But if it didn't include signatures in the Senate, it wouldn't work. This year, I'm in the Senate, not in the House. I worked within the Senate caucus and said, okay, what might work that I might be able to get through the Senate or through the House? And in that process, we said, look, maybe if the parties just put 2 names and there was guaranteed to be a primary, and then from the primary onto a general election, you could get that process done in about 180 days, mm-hmm. 163 days, actually. If you add signature gathering, the problem was, and this is one member of the Senate caucus felt this way when she ran for Congress and during a special election, the proposal for her to get again, we're trying to maximize the amount of representation because a member of the U.S. House of Representatives is only a representative for 740 days,
mm-hmm.
okay, or 730 days. So if you spend a long time getting elected, the thought for me is you're minimizing that district's impact or voice. In Utah, we can replace a member of the House of Representatives or the Senate or even the Attorney General in a month or less. So we're saying, hey, it's important here at the state level, but if U.S. Congress and with incumbency, we want to have a longer process, fine. Boy, did I spit out enough? The governor vetoed it.
Governor vetoed it.
But a member of the Senate caucus gave interesting insight that no one else in the public has or really thought about it. But the governor provided for a 2-week signature process, and he said you have to go get 7,000 signatures still, which is what's required. To get 7,000 signatures in 2 weeks, the quotes were $100,000 or more. And everybody's saying, well, that seems ridiculous. The alternative is take 7,000 signatures and leave that the same, and then add the same amount of time to gather signatures. So that's 4 months. Ah, that's not good either. So maybe you can decrease the signatures. That wasn't good in the House. And so literally we were just trapped in a box. I think I walked a very thin line mm-hmm. between what could pass in the House and what could pass in the Senate. The governor still doesn't like it, so he vetoed it, and that's perfectly fine.
Jim, why does this matter?
It's a snoozer, if you ask me.
I agree.
Actually. You know, look, so how
it's
often...
a mountain out of a molehill.
How often does a congressperson quit anyway?
Twice.
And then...
Period.
And so coming up with a system, if it's... just as a lot of blah, blah, blah. As far as I'm concerned, the longer the process, the better. The fewer representatives we have in Washington from Utah, usually the better the system works. So I'm for long absences, okay. Unless it's Ben McAdams.
and from the political middle, I just want to preserve the ability for people to get on the ballot via signatures. So, but it sounds like it's a hard thing to walk.
But I think what you hear from this conversation, I've given a very wonky answer to that, right? I think what you hear from that is the signature process is safe. Mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. you've got a governor who feels strongly about it. You have a Senate who feels mm-hmm. strongly
yeah.
about it. And despite the fact that the House is where it is, I think the project is
safe. You made my day, Dan.
Safe.
You made my day. Just staying with the governor for just a minute. He signed the Inland Port Bill. This is HB 433, and it allows the port to expand outside of Salt Lake County. People think this will help rural Utah. I'm having a little trouble with the comment that the Inland Port is expected to be the largest economic development project in Utah's history. I think that might be overpromising a bit.
The bill that you're quoting is substantive, but the real humdinger was the funding. Mm-hmm. They added another $28 million, and they snuck it in by earmark. There was no debate on it. The money is going there. And I'll tell you, labor squeezed the Democrats. There wasn't a Democrat who voted against that. The only 7 votes, at least in the Senate, that were against it were the rural guys that said, we got a honeypot here. How much was it, Dan? $150, $240 million?
Oh, boy.
Anyway, there was a big honeypot there, and we didn't get enough of it. So there it is. Sneaky, 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 sneaky. Once again, we get an inland port and $28 million, and it looked like voting at conference. It's bad.
I'm looking forward to inland port development that could help in a satellite way, places like Price or Vernal. I mean, I think it's okay, but I just think we ought to manage expectations on what the port can be. I think that the international airport is probably a bigger deal for this economy than the inland port will be,
yeah.
For example.
Yeah, it's probably true. And I will highlight that as long as there's fighting over who gets what, and it's a game of hungry, hungry hippos over money, I would argue you don't have everybody buying in.
Yeah.
And as a result, it's going to be tough to be successful.
Yeah. Dan and Jim, we also had this week, it was on Monday of this week, I believe, that the Trump administration, the Department of Health and Human Services, granted the bridge waiver to the state of Utah for Medicaid expansion. Yeah. Tell our listeners what this is.
So the bridge waiver is basically we can expand up to 100% of federal poverty level. And
70-30 match.
70-30 match.
70% Fed, 30%.
Let me tell you what Jim's talking
about. You're talking weird code here. For real people, every other state gets up to 134% of the poverty level, which for a family of four is going to get them somewhere around $34,000. Utah said, no, we don't want.
I don't think we use that.
We don't want 137% of poverty. We want 100%. We want to disqualify those rich Utah families that are making over $24,000 a year. So that's what the first waiver was about. The second one, and I love this. No, we don't want a 90-10 match. We want a 70-30 match. And then the Fed said, okay. And the legislature, the Republicans, are high-fiving everywhere like they've cured cancer. What kind of a thing to celebrate is this?
Dan, happy to hear your response. I was happy to see we got it because we were planning on it. And you'd think that a Republican administration would support a Republican state
on
this.
We had heard from the feds that it was a no-brainer to get the bridge. And so the bridge is in place, and we've got coverage. Now the question is, you know, how are we going to deal with the work requirement and how are we going to deal with, or I won't even say work requirement because that's not what it is. It's a work effort requirement, right?
Work effort and then a per capita caps.
And then a per capita caps. And so, you know, and the per capita caps, what that really does is it helps avoid the overspending in one area and minimizing services to another group. And it really is, it's kind of a no-brainer. There are several. Oregon is one of the states that kind of led out on this, and we think it's the right thing to do for state policy. So there's that. The harder part is the work effort, but if we lose on the work effort, we get full Medicaid expansion like we would have under Prop 1 anyways.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner with Dan McKay and Jim DeBacchus. We have some interesting political news to talk about in the next segment. Stay with us.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Dan McKay on the right.
Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. You are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, and we are going to talk some politics. I'm excited for this. I mentioned to Dan and Jim off air that I've been in several settings now where people have talked about Governor Huntsman. So our former Utah governor, who's currently the ambassador in Russia, that he would leave his post in May and actually come back to the Beehive State and run for governor. Now, that's just political chit-chat, but it leads us to some interesting thoughts. Who's in the mix? What would happen if Governor Huntsman did this? So, Jim, I'm going to go to you first just to hear, you know, who are you hearing will be in the governor's race? When will they start, you know, declaring?
This has been going around for a month or so. I tweeted about this 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Did you start the rumor then?
Yeah, it probably all started right with me. Look, Huntsman has the worst job in history to be between Putin and Trump. I mean, really.
Yeah.
He's a reasonable human being. I think they should send one of those Trump zombies over there that can just parrot out whatever the hell the president is saying, like, and let the Russians deal with that. But when you've got a thoughtful, reasonable guy back there, it must be hell.
It must be hell. And at least he was there when the LDS missionaries were kidnapped. I don't know what they were, but they were put in jail for proselytizing.
And they're out. And they're not missionaries.
Yeah, I know. They're volunteers. I knew that. But, but I was glad he was there for that.
So then you look at the broader implications, and one has to ask oneself, why would John Huntsman want to come back and be governor? He's been there, done that. Some people said he got a little bored at the end. So does he really want to come back and be the governor? Is there a new energy? Are there new? Let's suppose he does. And your Spencer Cox?
I think it's the
Cox.
Fact that there's an open seat. It might be appealing to him. I don't know. Okay, so Spencer Cox is someone.
You got Spencer Cox. You got Greg Hughes. You got, I think Hughes is out the day that Huntsman declares. Just like that fast.
You think Hughes will leave himself?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I don't think Huntsman, even with his power, can order anybody out. But I think they're out. I don't know who the standing Republican is going to stand up to Huntsman if he says, okay, I'm in. He'll be a fringer.
I don't know. I think, so here, I will just to take a contrarian view just a little bit, Jim. I do think Huntsman obviously will have the money. He'll have the name ID. He'll have all those things. All that's true. If you remember during his presidential run, though, he said some fairly unflattering things about the state, and he said some fairly unflattering things about the prevailing culture.
He reminded me of Bill Clinton a little bit during this time because it was sort of like, what's the definition of is? You know, they asked him if he was a Mormon, and he was like, well, it depends on what you think a Mormon is. You know?
Yeah, define Mormon.
Do you drink coffee? Didn't he do something with coffee?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
You know, and he just... So he had some things to say that I think if used artfully or informed the voters artfully, I think it will put a little bit of a little bit of a stain, right? But I think you add to that the fact that the Huntsman star is tied really close to both Obama and to Trump, right?
Yeah.
So there's that. I just
everybody
little
hates
things.
Him.
And John Sr.
Yeah.
John Sr.'s not here anymore.
Yeah.
Those are some interesting dynamics. He's a prince. I mean, that's a word that I use to talk about. He's smart. He's attractive. He's experienced.
But him and Romney have a long standing. If you haven't ever read Mormon Rivals, it's a really interesting, kind of want to say book, but it's really kind of an essay. But it's a really interesting history of the Romney and Huntsman family and their struggle for dominance. It would be really interesting to watch if Huntsman was there and Romney was a statewide elected official and obviously serving back in D.C. Yeah. And that dynamic would be weird also.
So if Huntsman did this, it would have a chilling effect on other candidates. Would it chill out someone like Spencer Cox, our lieutenant governor, Dan?
I think it would have a chilling effect on the field generally, but I don't think it changes Cox's likability. I still think Spencer has a high likability factor. Mm-hmm. So I think if you put John Huntsman and Spencer Cox and Thomas Wright and Greg Hughes,
Amy Winder Newton, I want to put her name out there.
And, you know, you put all of those people on the stage, it's going to be hard for any one of them to stand taller than John Huntsman Jr.
Mm, that's an interesting political review.
An interesting moment here, because I think John Huntsman would have had a very difficult time getting through a Republican convention.
The world has changed. Yeah, the world has changed. Jim, we have to ask you this, but what is going on the Democratic side?
I see nobody. Okay. Nobody's maneuvering. Nobody's raising money. We may want to go to one of the. Maybe we'll ask Spencer Cox. You know, if all else fails and he decides not to run. I mean, there's just no farm team at all. Maybe you can make the point that Democrats ought not to be wasting resources on a race they're not going to win anyway. We can't win statewide, so why throw a lot of money at it?
Yeah.
So just, you know, John Huntsman Jr. is only 59 years old. That's really young. Mm-hmm. I think it's 12 years young. I think Governor Herbert's in his 70s. Don't quote me on that. Mm-hmm. He's a very young
Romney is as
governor.
Well.
And Romney is as well. And so I you know, John
Huntsman Jr. We're the hatch for the Democrats. He's not doing anything. Sorry.
So, you know, anyways, I think it would be interesting, Jim, if you could find somebody that was named none of the above.
Yeah. Jim, what is going on behind the scenes in the Utah Democratic Party, you know, that would put us in a situation? I find it so troubling that there wouldn't be a handful of Democratic gubernatorial candidates that we could be top of mind to express. What is going on inside the party?
Well, the Republicans have gerrymandered us clearly again there, you know, in the governor's area. Look.
Everyone's supposed to laugh because you can't gerrymander state lines, but keep going.
Look, we, the Democrats, have got to get their party
together.
We need
to give Daggett to
Wyoming.
I'm just
bummed that he stole my joke. I'm not going to laugh at it because he stole my joke.
Well, it was my joke, and then you were going to steal it. And then we did. The Democrats are, I've never seen them more divided as a party statewide than they are right now.
And that must be coming from the national, where you've got
it's
this
not.
Extreme.
It's coming from, you know, politics turns tribal a lot, and it's more about personalities and the national figures and whatever. It's just
so it's not a Bernie contingent versus a more moderate
there is
contingent.
There's always that, you know, and maybe this thing kicked off 4 years ago when Peter Caroon had to preside over this divided delegation. But it's the usual problem. Usually, we're small enough that we all gulp and we hold hands and do it together. But I don't think that's true with Utah Democrats right now. And they better get their act together, because there might be a rare opportunity here. And I just don't see them kind of capitalizing on it.
Dan, on the other side of the aisle, what's going on in the Republican Party that's worth bringing up?
There's only one option, right? So Jim calls it tribal. For some reason, it's always becomes NASCAR-like to me. Right, where everybody's choosing their favorite jacket and their favorite driver and their, you know, and you define yourself by who your driver is, right?
Right.
And in local politics tends to do that sometimes over governor races, over big statewide, you know, races, and even presidential races that way. And so it doesn't surprise me that the year that, you know, obviously I think the Republicans are just going to go with Donald Trump in 2020 again very easily. And then I think the Democrats, on the other hand, are in this weird race to defame every other candidate that might run. I mean, it's the ultimate crab bucket, crab in a bucket deal. One guy starts
climbing
to elevate,
and pulling him down.
They climb up and they pull him right down. Look at, you know, Joe Biden steps into the field And if the Democrats haven't
all
ripped
of a sudden
Joe Biden
smelling
to
women's
death,
hair.
Oh my goodness.
But you know what? It works though. A lot of times,
smelling
those...
people's hair, kissing
Dan,
people.
Dan, get away from my hair. look at that, that old crab barrel approach. That's what Trump used and won.
Yeah.
That's what Clinton did. Remember, there was so many of those experiences. Some, I mean, you can point to a lot of times that whoever emerges, despite all the issues, they go ahead and win.
Yeah. Let's talk about Governor Romney for a minute. I should say Senator Romney. I'm so trained to call him Governor Romney. He's about a quarter, you know, I mean, he's 3 months in. A quarter has passed. What kind of grades do you guys give him for what he's doing?
I mean, he reminds me a bit of The Exorcist because his head is spinning. Sometimes he does things and says things, and I go, wow. That's the Mitt Romney that we'd all hope for. Then sometimes he feels like I think he's got to do makeup like a ref in a basketball game, and I have to turn my head the other way. What a bonehead, dumb thing to say that is. So he's learning to become Mitt Romney's senator, and let's see what happens. That there's something quietly going on in the background now, though. Mitt Romney is meeting together with Democrats, and he's the one that I predict is going to craft the Republican health care because the Republicans are in a catastrophic situation where they're against the Affordable Care Act, but they ain't got nothing.
Yeah.
And if they go into that election with nothing other than trust us after this election, you will watch what happened 2 years ago, or a year ago anyway, multiply dramatically. You're going to lose in
a bucket.
So if
Romney drafts health care, does that mean Levitt's right there with him, Natalie?
I don't know. I've not heard that.
Because I think Mike is a good mind on this issue,
oh,
and
yeah,
with his background at HHS, it just seems like it would be a natural fit.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, and I do not know the answer to that. Yeah. But I would agree that with Jim that the Republicans have no plan in health care, and it's a real problem. And it's increasingly so because the longer we wait on health care to fix it, the harder it gets.
Look at Sean Reyes. Suppose he's there. He brought the case. He's part of the plaintiffs bringing the case that would simply end Obamacare. So the Supreme Court comes out with their decision. There it is. It's 200 pages, and it says, okay, the Affordable Care Act is hereby dead. Millions and millions and millions of people are without health care. The whole system is thrown into complete anarchy. And we go back to Sean Reyes and say, okay, buddy, you got it. And there's no plan B. What the hell?
Yeah. Dan, you want to give a grade to Romney, and then we'll go to gripes. As I pass it over, I'm like really pleased with what he's doing.
Yeah, I'll give him a B.
Okay,
I'm
going to
say I'm a solid
bad.
B. No, he's above average.
I'm in D.C. next week, helping out with some issues pertaining to Utah's coal country, Carbon and Emery County, and I was real happy to see on my schedule that I have a meeting with Senator Lee and Senator Romney together. And I love it when the Utah congressional delegation is together. I don't like it when you have to go meet with them separately.
Oh, yeah.
It's just because it means something to
especially
me.
Especially senators.
Well, yeah. Like, well, it means something to me that they come at, you know, why would either senator see helping coal in Utah any differently?
Well, yeah. Lee and Hatch hated each other, so they're not, they wouldn't get together for,
yeah,
you know,
and I've got both
but
of them
I think
together.
That's a hats off to both of them.
Yeah,
great.
Very positive. Let's go to gripes. Dan, what do you got for the gripes?
But it's a hats audience. Off to Natalie, too. I'm not gonna miss that. You got two senators that want to sit with you and talk about an issue.
Well,
that's
I'm
amazing.
Taking the mayor of Price.
Yeah, that's awesome.
A guy
awesome.
Named Mike Corianos. And, you know,
hey,
we're doing
so my hats off
things.
To Senator Lee and the Senator Romney recognizing
give him high
talent.
Marks.
Yeah, that's great. Let's see. Gripes. You know, about this time of year, I am anxious for the sun to come out and for us to be able to hit a little white ball around a big grassy field. And I'm absolutely done with the rain. We've had enough snow and everything else this year, so
oh
I think
my.
We got plenty.
Yeah.
I'm ready to play golf. That's my gripe.
Okay.
Simple.
Jim.
My gripe on my last show,
which we don't really believe that, but...
No, it really is.
Jim got a promotion to ABC4 or something.
The state of Utah...
What's with this? Can we talk about... That should be our gripe.
Yeah, well, the station said, you know, really we need somebody in power. And so I made a deal with Channel 2, so you can see
okay,
me
Channel
there
2,
with a
KG.
Podcast, and you can watch. The big issue for me, the big gripe is, in 10 seconds here, the
one,
state needs to really buckle
two,
down and deal with big, broad, three, serious issues that they've ignored, like education and air
seven,
and our land issues, and stop all
eight,
the political bickering and get that done.
Nine,
That's not bad. Jim, we will make sure you come to the program frequently. My gripe is just going to be no Democratic name being mentioned for governor. What's that at about? We're supposed to have a marketplace of ideas.
Who needs them?
Democrats are supposed to stand up and make their case, you know, in the debate. And there's just nobody being talked about. I think that's a real problem for our state.
Me too. It's terrible.
You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. Natalie Gochner and Dan McKay and our favorite Democrat, Jim DeBacchus. Thanks, Jim, for everything. Program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Appreciate you listening.